Well, you may have heard, Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, was published 50 years ago today. You've undoubtedly heard it simply changed everything. Let's give a quick example. Here was how a woman's world was described in a 1957 Ivory laundry detergent commercial.
This is Junior, happy as a lark. This is Daddy, working like a horse. And this is Mommy, busy as a beaver, wise as an owl. Busy because look at that wash Mommy's done.
Of course, there are still women, and I am one, who love a good detergent, but not if it's my only option for growth. And as Janet Maslin reminds us in the New York Times today, Betty Friedan sat down with market researchers, one who said, when instant cake mix came out, it had to be pitched as a creative advance, not a time saver, because you wouldn't want to scare women with the prospect of free time. What would they do with it? The Feminine Mystique was credited with launching a second phase of feminism after voting rights. It had its critics. For instance, only white suburban women with husbands with paychecks were included. But are we also seeing a backlash now? Stats show the percentage of Americans preferring the male breadwinner, female homemaker model actually rose in recent years. Well, family historian Stephanie Kuntz says no. It's not the idea that was the problem. It's the workplace. We want to spend a few minutes with her today. Stephanie Kuntz is professor of family history at Evergreen State College, author of A Strange Stirring, The Feminine Mystique and American Women at the Dawn of the 1960s, and she joins us now. Stephanie, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And let's go back. Friedan said what she was writing about did not have a name, so she named it, calling it The Feminine Mystique. What did she mean by that?
Well, she meant a whole set of myths about the nature and desire and capabilities of women that we didn't have any word for. Today we might call them sexism, but there was no such word for them. This was this idea in the post-war world, and particularly the 40s and 50s Freudianism, that women were naturally sexually and intellectually passive, that they got all their meaning through their role as wives and mothers. And as one psychiatrist put it, the normal woman renounces all individual aspirations because she finds her greatest achievements in keeping a good home and in watching the achievements of her husband and her children.
This was after World War II. Women had to be driven from the workforce in order to make way for the returning GIs. Somebody described the feminine mystique as the suffocating vision of domestic goddesshood. But doctors, you know, not the one you mentioned, but there were doctors who were noting that it was causing problems.
Oh, yes. I mean, Betty Friedan was not the first person to understand that there was a problem. Doctors were worried about the housewife syndrome. Psychiatrists were passing out tranquilizers and sleeping pills to women like they were candy.
Mother's little helper. Mother's little helper, yes.
But Friedan was the first to say to people, and in some sense her book was the very first self-help book for women that had some kind of political implication for their future. She said, you know, you've been sitting here being told that you're not a real woman, that you can't accept your, quote, feminine destiny. That was a big psychiatric buzzword in those days. Because you're unhappy, because you're discontented. Or maybe sometimes you even think that it's your husband's fault. But no, this is not your fault. It's not your husband's fault. It's a societal fault. You have not been allowed to utilize your human desire to have meaning in your life, to use your own talents, to have something beyond tonight's dinner to look forward to.
Well, and not that having a wonderful dinner is not, and the women's movement was, you know, late on this, but they also came to that conclusion. It's the choice of whether or not you want to be the one home making the beautiful dinner. And just to underscore, because there are younger women picking up this book now, and they find they're finding it puzzling. Underscore the culture. What were some of the laws in place that kept women in their place?
Well, I'll tell you, it's absolutely stunning. For young women today, I think 1963 might as well be 1363. They have no memory of the time when if you wanted a job, you had to go to the help-wanted female section of the newspaper where they could actually legally ask for, as many New York Times ads did, that you must be really beautiful to get this job. If you were a college-educated woman who did get a job, you earned less than your average male high school graduate. graduate or even high school dropout. They also may probably don't remember what it was like for homemakers in those days. There's a tendency to think, oh, well, maybe homemakers were better off. There were only 8 states in the country where a woman who had kept a home had any claim on her husband's income at all. And you know what? The definition, there were head and master laws giving the man the final say. And one of the most shocking things is that the legal definition of rape in those days was forcing sexual intercourse upon someone other than your wife.
Okay. Well, there's a list there, and we'll add to it that in 1963, most women could not get a credit card without a male to co-sign for her. So into this comes this book. Briefly, as we go into the break, how was it received?
Well, it was received with a combination of relief from some women and absolute outright indignation. You know, when the first excerpt of the book that Friedan published was given the controversial title, I Say Women Are People Too, you know, not just females different than males. And this was a controversial thing to say. People just flipped out. One psychiatrist said that's the worst thing society can do is treat its citizens primarily as people instead of as male and female.
Well, so there's the context in which we're going to have the next conversation. What's happening now? Stephanie Kuntz, professor of family history, author of A Strange Stirring, The Feminine Mystique and the American Movement, Women at the Dawn of the 1960s. When we come back, is there a backlash now? Stephanie says no. She says the problem is that the laws have not kept up with what both men and women really want, which is Betty Friedan's vision. We'll have that in 1 minute here now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our discussion of The Feminine Mystique, Betty Friedan's bestseller that was published 50 years ago today. We're speaking with Stephanie Kuntz, professor of family history at Evergreen State College, also author of A Strange Stirring, The Feminine Mystique and American Women at the Dawn of the 1960s. And Stephanie, you've got some stats in a recent article in the New York Times. We'll link people to it. But in 1977, 2/3 of Americans still believed it was better for men to work outside the home, women to take care of the home. By 1994, 2/3 of all Americans rejected that idea. But then you also say that between 94 and 2004, most recently, the percentage of Americans preferring the old model, male breadwinner, female homemaker, actually rose from 34% to 40%. But I'm going to get to what you think this is. Some say it's proof that Friedan's, you know, grand experiment failed. But you say what?
Well, I say no, that's not actually the case. First of all, that's really a fairly small bump up, 34% to 40%.
But still, it's the wrong direction for many. You know,
it is the wrong direction. It is the wrong direction, and we saw in the late 90s a kind of stall. We also saw a decline in the number of people, just a little one in the number of people who thought that a working woman could have a good relationship with her children. Since 2004, by the way, that has started up. Word again, thinking that they can have a good relationship, and it's reached all new highs. So the way I interpret this stall that we got in the late 1990s was that we really hit a wall. Women and men continue to want to be equal. And when you interview young people, 70 to 80% of them say that they want a totally egalitarian marriage where the man and the woman share breadwinning and they share child rearing. The problem is that we live in a world, in a country that is the world laggard in terms of allowing people the kinds of family-friendly work policies and support systems they need to make that happen. And when two people bump their heads against the wall long enough trying to share 3 full-time jobs without any support from their employers or their government, we're the only country in the world aside from 8 little islands, I think it is, that doesn't have paid maternity leave, that doesn't have statutory limits on the workplace. When people bump their head into the wall long enough, I think sometimes they begin to just get discouraged, and that's what happened in the second half of the 90s.
Look, I want to talk more about what you're seeing in other countries, but some more statistics. First of all, people know anecdotally what you said about egalitarianism is true. I mean, you speak to young people today, young men can't imagine that they would not be allowed into the room when their wife was having a baby. They can't imagine that. They can't imagine that they wouldn't hold the children. I mean, there was a time when parents, you know, when the father sometimes didn't even touch the child. They can't imagine that. And there are studies that show, for instance, in 2010, a poll showed both men and women in a majority said the best marriage is a marriage of equals. 2001 study at Boston College, 65% of fathers felt both parents should provide equal care for children. But that's impossible unless your workplace somehow helps you. How are other countries doing this?
Well, most other countries, especially the Europeans and other industrial nations, but even countries that are way behind us in their resources and their development, have come up with a whole series of acts for family work reconciliation. Most of them, as I say, have subsidized maternity leave that lasts much longer than the measly unpaid 12 weeks that American workers, and actually only 60% of American workers are even eligible for that. They have subsidized leave, so it doesn't become a class privilege to stay home with your kids. 81 countries also have paternity leave, so it makes it possible for the man to stay home and do some bonding with the child. And more countries are experimenting, as Sweden does, with making those separate leaves so that it really gives the man an incentive to stay home, because otherwise he would lose the leave. He can't just turn it over to his mother and to his wife, the mother. And we're finding that that really, really helps his ability to become an equal partner at home instead of a second-class parent while the woman remains a second-class worker.
Address the criticism, though, that this is an economy in which, jobs have still not come back fully. And there are workers who don't have children who resent the treatment that's given to women who do. How do you make that work?
Well, I think that that there's a lot of nonsense being written about this. First of all, one of the problems with American society is that some people have too much work and some people have too little. So if we would go put some limits, some real statutory limits on the work week, as every other industrial country has done, that would help us share the jobs more equally.
Well, this brings us to your overall conclusion, which is that we're talking now about women and men and working women and working men and single women and married women. You say that ditched all of that language. I mean, for instance, Betty Friedan was criticized for not talking about African-American women who were working and raising families or blue-collar single women. She was not including them. You say throw all of that out. Talk about people and workers, all of whom have not seen their wages rise, for instance, in 30 years. Make it what, a human rights issue?
Well, and exactly, and that has to do with what you said earlier about why single people might resent that. No, it's crazy to resent that. We all have aging. We're all members of families. We all have caregiving responsibilities. I mean, look, there are more people giving care and assistance to their aging parents right now than raising kids under age 6. So we can all benefit by work-family policies that allow us to do that care. Society benefits when we don't have to turn them over to strangers and welfare systems if we can't afford it. Kids benefit. 70% of kids are being raised in households where every member of the household works outside the home. So, yeah, this is just a basic human rights issue, a health and safety issue, if you will. We solved the problems of health and safety and factory work conditions 100 years ago. Now it's time to take on the health and safety risks that are in our current lack of work-family policy.
It's time for the next wave resulting from Betty Friedan's book. Again, 50th anniversary of the publication of The Feminine Mystique. We've been talking with Stephanie Kuntz, author of A Strange Stirring, The Feminine Mystique, An American Woman at the Dawn of the 1960s. Love to hear opinions from you out there at hereandnow.org. And Stephanie, as always, lovely to speak with you.
A pleasure on my part, too.
Quick break, back in a minute, Here and Now.